It is Friday, April 12th. This is the Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn, and you are riding home with me. And no, I did not upload yesterday's show yet. And the beep means my seatbelt isn't on. Trying to get home a little early so my child can go to baseball practice. And then I will, as soon as I get there, pop right back into work. But in the meantime, we're going to have a Christian Commute podcast. Today's show title is Producer, Director, Actor. Producer, Director, Actor. Tuesday's show title will be Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. No, I'm just kidding. But producer, director, actor. I have a question in the inbox. I guess you could say it's about Christian liberty. The question in the inbox about Christian liberty. And as always, we have the Bible chapter review. We continue in Luke chapter 1, and I'm going to see if I can get home in a quarter tank of gas. I think I can make it. It's deceptive. It's deceptive because this car has a little gas tank, and I'm used to driving bigger cars. Let's see. What else? Oh, yeah. Before I start the show, I've got news. News for you. I went to GoDaddy. You know what you get at GoDaddy? Domains. I am now the owner of YElevation.com. And that is my next project to go along with Y Crosspoint, Y Rockbridge, and Y Rockbridge. And I think it's going to be a little easier because, as I said yesterday, there are so many Stephen Furtick sermon reviews already out there because they're so bad. And now, look at this. I'm stuck behind somebody who does not want to pass this truck. Go, dude. Go, dude. Oh, you're terrible. I'm on the connector here. And there was a, for whatever reason, there's a tractor trailer in the left lane. What are you doing in the left lane? And then when I tried to pass him, some truck like sped up beside me, and now he's matching speed with the tractor trailer. Fine, why don't you both go as fast as a transfer truck on the road, and I just won't get home to take my kid to baseball. The Christian Commute, don't pull out, don't pull out, don't do it! Now some maniac is pulling out into the median, and he's got a countertop, a granite countertop in the back of his truck. That was gutsy. All right. Oh, it's just Friday. Friday on the interstate in Georgia, I suppose. Bah. Let's get to the Bible chapter review. No, wait, I wasn't done talking about Elevation, was I? Oh, yeah. Send me money so I can advertise these things on Facebook. You can do that at PayPal, which is at Christian Commute. Venmo, which is my name, Seth Dunn. There's probably some number next to it. Look it up. It's got a picture of me. Some of y'all don't know what I look like, I guess. Or you can just get on Patreon. Listen, I'm so out of sorts that I'm in the wrong lane. Ugh. Oh. Well, I guess I have to turn now. That's okay. Hold on a second. Now I have to reorient myself. I'm back. I almost got lost on a side road, and then my navigation system didn't work. I should start the show over and just not do one, because it's just been a disaster so far. A disaster. Okay. Luke chapter 1. Verses 26 through 29. Luke chapter 1, verses 26 through 29. And I'll start that as soon as I get out of this roundabout. Somebody put a roundabout in Dalton, Georgia. I hate roundabouts. I think I've told you all that before. It's on Carbondale Road. Ugh. All right. You know what? The person who asked the question today might actually know where I am and be like, oh yeah, I don't like that roundabout either. Luke chapter 1, verses. There's another roundabout. Oh my gosh. Hold on. I'm so sorry. But let me navigate my way onto I-75 South from this exit I don't normally use. Because I took a wrong turn on accident. Because I thought I was at the place where I usually turn left, but I wasn't because they're going too slow. Oh my gosh. It's looping me back around. Who did this? I'm now turning on a loop. It's like three roundabouts to get on to 75. Oh. And to make matters worse, some report is wrong and I have to fix it when I get home. All right, Luke chapter 1, verses 26 through 29. Luke chapter 1, verses 26 through 29, as I merge on to the thick Friday traffic. Now, in the sixth month, which by the way is February or March, this is the Jewish calendar. In the sixth month, which is our third or fourth month, dependent. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city in Galilee called Nazareth, to a virgin engaged to a man whose name was Joseph, of the descendants of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. And coming in, he said to her, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was very perplexed at this statement, and kept pondering what kind of salutation this was. Okay, so now we're done in the story with the conception narrative of John the Baptist, who is Jesus' forerunner who's going to herald his coming. And now we're moving on to the conception story of Jesus himself. So the same angel who informed Zacharias' father is going to inform Mary here. And I think later he's going to appear to Joseph so Joseph doesn't divorce Mary. Okay. So first of all, we notice it's springtime, March or April, because it's the sixth month. That doesn't really make much of a difference. That's just Luke giving us a historical detail. And for those of you wondering, hold on, was Jesus born in December? Well, is it December, 9 months away from March? Pretty close. Oh, gosh. There's another tractor trailer in the left lane. This is unconscionable. There's another one. This is unconscionable. This is unconscionable as Roman rule over the Jews in their Holy Land. Now I'm Seth the Zealot, and I'm zealous about people getting out of the left lane, coming up I-75. This is horrible. Trying to tell people about the Bible here. All right. It's the sixth month. Gabriel comes, and he comes to Mary, who is a virgin. She has not known a man intimately. Not only is she a virgin, she is engaged. If she was married, she would have probably already have had sex. But right now, she's just engaged. Now, in that culture, let me add this. Betrothal was more formal than it is in our culture. In our culture, you ask a girl to marry you. And usually she says yes. I've never heard of anybody saying no before. It's not like a question you just ask. But you ask a girl to marry you, she says yes. And then you might get married right then. You might get married if she's pregnant, you're probably going to get married right then. If you might get married 3 months from now. It might be 3 years from now. Just depends on whatever your plans in life are. Sometimes people want to finish school. Sometimes people want to get married right away and start having kids. It's different for everybody. And usually, there is some kind of romantic interest involved in that y'all have the feelsies for each other. I asked my wife to marry me because I had the feelsies for her. Here's a gorgeous girl. I want to marry her, okay? But back then, it wasn't always about the feelsies. It could have been. These marriages were put together by families. So this betrothal period is a legal deal. The marriage has not been finalized. But to break it up, to get out of it, there has to be some kind of legal action. It's not that you're going to get it in a fight and then the woman's going to throw the ring back at the husband or the fiancé. I don't want to marry you. No, it's a legal betrothal. That's why when the Bible says later Joseph wanted to divorce her quietly, well, why'd they have to get divorced if they weren't married yet? Well, because they don't live together yet. Obviously, they're not having sex yet because she's still a virgin. They're in this betrothal period, which was common for their culture. And this virgin is betrothed, so she's going to have a husband soon. Think it's hard being a single mother then or now? Try then. She's going to have a husband soon, and it's Joseph, and she's betrothed. And here this angel comes, and how does he greet her? Favored one. And he says, "The Lord is with you." And this perplexes her. You got to imagine Mary's probably 14, 15 years old here. This is like a freshman in high school for our age, or a sophomore. This is a very young girl. And this angel is coming to speak to her out of nowhere. Greetings, favored one. God's with you. She's like, what is this guy talking about? She's wondering about it. She's perplexed. And that's where we're going to leave off in verse 29. Now, let me talk about a little context here, right? There is no question textually in the New Testament that Mary is a virgin when she conceives Jesus. She's never known a man. In fact, we're going to get to it later. The angel tells Joseph, don't have sex with her until she has the baby. Probably the hardest thing God's ever asked anyone to do. Like, okay, God, I get it. You don't want me to have premarital sex, but when I get married, I'm going to have at it, right? No. You still got to wait 9 months while she has someone else's baby. All right, we'll get to that when we get to that. But there's no question that Mary's a virgin. The Greek meaning for virgin is not up for debate. It is what it is. Off the top of my head, I want to say Parthenos, but I don't remember the Greek terminology exactly. But what some Jewish scholars will argue, Jewish scholars who don't believe in Jesus Christ the Messiah, they will say this does not fulfill a prophecy about the virgin birth. Because what Christians say is, whoa, you go back and look in Isaiah and it says, behold, the virgin will be with child. And it's prophesying the birth of Jesus. And what those Jewish scholars will say, well, no, the Hebrew word there used in Isaiah could mean young girl or virgin. And there's another word that means virgin, so they could have used virgin. They didn't. They used young girl. So there is an argument that the virgin birth did not fulfill any Old Testament prophecy. Now, I don't think their argument's very good. Number one, it's not much of a prophecy, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before. It's not much of a prophecy to say a young girl will give birth. Because that's who gives birth, young girls. Old women go through menopause, they don't give birth. But that's who was having babies at the time. Mary is 14 or 15, right? She's a young girl. Who else is having babies but young girls? That's not a prophecy to say that a young girl will give birth. to say that a virgin will give birth, like, that's something worth prophesying about. Number two, the New Testament says virgin. So if we never saw Isaiah, if Isaiah got lost off the face of the planet, the New Testament would still say virgin. The narrative given by Luke here is that Mary is a virgin still. By the way, sorry, Roman Catholics, not a perpetual virgin. She's a virgin here. She didn't stay a virgin forever. When you when your wife has a baby, the doctor says, "All right, y'all can't have sex for so many days." That's about how long I imagine Mary had to wait till she wasn't a virgin anymore. Because Joseph is sitting there engaged and married, and the angel says, "Don't have a baby." But undeniably, without question, that's the text here. Now, what the skeptical non-believer will say is, we'll see, Luke didn't understand the Old Testament prophecy because he was working with the Septuagint. And he didn't understand that it was a young girl, not a virgin. I think the Hebrew word is Beulah, I think. That it was a young girl, not a virgin. So he made Jesus' birth be a virgin birth. And what they're saying is basically he made up his story anyway. And of course they're going to say he made up his story. Listen, there's a lot of people who try to pick at Luke. They'll say, oh, well, he had to make up this tax census that we don't have a record of anywhere else. Why in the world are people going from Nazareth to Bethlehem? Because who's ever heard of going to your ancestral home to register for a census? So that didn't happen. And, oh, he didn't know about the word virgin was wrong. So that's made up. But that's really kind of backwards, because if you look at Luke, he gives more detail than anybody writing the Gospels. Like, Luke Acts is full of little details that point to the authenticity of the story, and that the writer was very familiar with the people and times being portrayed. So that's just a little apologetic note for you. I figured out what the problem is on 75. There's an oversized load. And this is the second one I've seen today. So these people with the oversized loads, like, you get drivers and they're like tinted, like, I don't want to pass it. They get up there, I'm afraid to go around it. Like, and if it just takes one or two of those tentative people to get everybody stuck back here. You got to go. And I'll tell you another thing that happens is the tractor trailers don't want to get behind it. So they get in the left lane going 60 miles an hour. And it takes them forever to pass the oversized load. That's what's going on here. And it would happen on a day that I'm trying to get home in a hurry. Most days, I ain't trying to get home in a hurry on Friday. Go play a little game of ping pong, go back to my office, work for another hour. But only today, when I've got to get home and get right back to it, does something like this happen. All right, let's go on to the inbox. This question comes from Lauren in Chattanooga. Is that right? Lauren in Chattanooga? She's written in a few times before. I'm trying to think of all the people who write in. She's probably closest to my office now. Used to be Somerville was the closest when I worked in Calhoun. But I think Chattanooga closest to Dalton. So of this international show, somebody is writing in from my hometown of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I'm glad the federal government, when it wants to tax me, doesn't make me travel to my ancestral home of Chattanooga to register. I'm from Harrison, Tennessee, if anybody was wondering. And I was born at Memorial Hospital. All right. There's just no getting around it. I was getting in the middle lane to see what I could do, but I'm just stuck. Here's Lauren's question. Would it be considered a violation of Romans 14 to center a theology discussion group around whiskey and cigars? I'll bet you $1 million they're Calvinists. All right. Would it be a violation of Romans 14 to center a theology discussion group around whiskey and cigars? And to give a little background, she mentioned that there used to be a guy at her church who had a theology discussion group at his house where he wanted to make theology more approachable, and he would invite people to his house to talk about theology, and they would have whiskey and cigars. And she made a point, like, it wasn't an official church event like you find in the church calendar. It was by invitation only. Oh, I'm almost by the oversized load. The sea has parted before me because the tractor trailer got out of the way. Oh, hallelujah. I'm through. I'm in the clear. So it wasn't official. And she asks, is this a violation of Romans 14? So if you go look at Romans 14, Paul is saying there, if there's somebody who abstains from a certain food because he doesn't think God wants him to eat it. So you think about somebody keeping kosher. The person who doesn't abstain from foods is not to judge that person. Conversely, the person who is abstaining from the food is not to judge the person who doesn't abstain. So you have to imagine this situation where Gentiles and Jews are mixing in the church. And the Jew is saying, there's no way I'm going to Western Sizzlin' tonight for the all-you-can-eat seafood bar because I'm not going to eat that shrimp. Not going. And the Gentile says, oh my gosh, they're having an all-you-can-eat seafood bar at Western Sizzlin'. I'm going to go. And the Gentile sneers at the Jew, like, listen, you don't have to do that. You need to eat this food. You're withholding something from yourself that you don't have to do. And the Jew says to the Gentile, no, that's disgusting. You're not supposed to be eating like that. I am keeping kosher. I'm upholding the law, and you are dishonoring God by eating. But see, why would the Gentile abstain from the shrimp? That's not a part of his culture. But the Jew, he's grown up. Remember what Peter said in Acts when he gets the vision? He's like, no, Lord, I've never eaten anything unclean. Peter has gone his whole life without eating any unclean food, but people around him are eating. He's like, no, I've never done that. So you have this cultural clash there based on religion, by the way, because under the old covenant, you weren't supposed to eat those things. Not to mention the Sabbath day, because Paul even says in Romans 14, one person holds one day above another and another above another. But what does Paul say? Who are you to judge another man's servant? He says the person who abstains from eating is doing it for the sake of God. So don't judge that guy. Also, if you're the guy who's abstaining from eating, don't judge the guy who doesn't abstain. And we talk about this verse a lot. We talk about Christian liberty. So there are certain things that we may not do as Christians because we find them distasteful. They say, I don't want to listen to an album where there's F words in the songs. I'm not going to do that. Or I'm not going to go to a movie where there's even partial nudity or cuss words because I don't want to be in front of that. I'm not going to drink beer because people get drunk off beer and I don't want to be even associated with that. I'm not going to do it. All right? And then you see somebody walking out of a PG-13 movie with a beer and he goes to church with you and you say, you can't do that. And now you're judging that guy. Because you're abstaining from something for God for your sake, from your conscience, but then he won't do it, and now you're trying to bind his conscience. And that's where you'd go to Romans 14 and say, well, let's ask the question, is this a matter of Christian liberty? And we Baptists like to talk about soul freedom and the priesthood of all believers and individual conscience. What convicts you may not convict him. And then you start thinking, well, the Holy Spirit convicts of sin. There's only one of those. But that's where the application of Romans 14 is. So, Lauren, when you ask, is it a violation to have that? I mean, it would be a violation for you to tell the guy he can't have it. because you would be, I hate to use this term, infringing on his Christian liberty. It's not a violation of Romans 14 to have it. Now, when you think about it, I think it's Corinthians that talks about the weaker brother. And you were talking about meat sacrificed to idols, and you're talking about a Gentile who used to be an idolater, and he knows that the meat sold at the market was used in a pagan ritual, and he doesn't want to be around that. And Paul is saying, it's okay for you to eat that meat, but don't eat that meat around that guy. So the guy who's having the theology discussion at his house centered around whiskey and cigars, he might be excluding the weaker brother. What if there's somebody coming into the church out of a lifestyle where he used to be a smoker or he used to be a heavy drinker, and now he wants to associate with Christian men and talk about theology, but the Christian men in his church are sitting around smoking cigars and drinking whiskey? That might be very offensive to the weaker brother. So that's something the guy putting on the cigar and whiskey theology discussion at his house should think of. But no, it's not a Romans 14 issue to do it. It's a Romans 14 issue to judge him and say he's sinning, Lauren. Now, having said that, I'm going to judge him. That's really immature. When I see these guys, and they're almost always in the Reformed community, and they always have beards. They got a big beard, and they got a cigar. I'm like, Spurgeon, I got a cigar, and I got my whiskey, and I'm going to talk about my favorite whiskey, and I'm going to talk about my favorite cigar, and I got this Christian liberty, and let me make Facebook groups about it. Think about Reformed Pub. I mean, if you grew up like I did, a Baptist in the South, just didn't drink. I mean, there's certain churches in Cartersville, Roland Springs, the Demonic Church of Freemasonry is one, and then Pine Grove Baptist Church, part of the church covenant is you can't drink beverage alcohol to be a member of that church. Now, by the way, I think, they're in a huge danger of violating Romans 14, but there are certain churches that you can't drink alcohol. There's others where it's looked down upon. And I got to tell you this, when I see people out in town that I go to church with and they're drinking, or I see people on Facebook that I go to church with and they're drinking, I think to myself, this is not good for the church body as a whole. As a society, we've moved from Baptists who wouldn't be caught dead drinking. You know the old joke, what's the difference between a Baptist and a Methodist? And the punchline is the Methodist will say hi to you at the liquor store. We've gone from Baptists wouldn't be caught dead out drinking to now it's okay to just go to the bar and post it on Facebook. We went from not drinking and wearing suits to church to now we're wearing jeans and a t-shirt and we're out drinking. That's not good. That's not a good direction. Do I have a Bible verse to cite that for? No. And that's why I don't go up to those people and say, you shouldn't be doing this. But I think of that and I say, correlation is not causation. But you see these things correlated and think, of course, this is why we're in the culture of singing Elevation music and Hillsong and, having ball pits in the kids' area. Of course. What happened to holiness and separation? So all that to say, Lauren, that's the background I come from, and I may not get to the show topic today. I may make this my show topic. And some of those people come from that background too, and they're kind of sticking it to people, and they say, oh, we're going to gather around whiskey and cigars. Think about this. Whiskey is a vice. Whiskey is a vice, or at least it can be. When you think about vices, gambling, whiskey, beer drinking, smoking cigarettes, things that people enjoy that aren't really good for them, that's a vice. Whiskey is a vice. I don't know if I would say smoking a cigar is a vice. Probably if you smoke one every day or every week, it might be. But one cigar isn't going to hurt you. So I don't, if you want to smoke a cigar every once in a while, I'll do it, especially when Alabama beats Tennessee, Roll Tide, which is the last time I had a cigar. And I bought it off a Tennessee fan because he wasn't going to use it. Anyway. Not only are these things vices, they're luxury items. Cigars are a luxury item. Like a cigarette costs a quarter. A cigar costs like $10. So, and the same thing for whiskey. I'm passing the Budweiser plant right now. There's a Budweiser plant in Cartersville. So, I'm sure they run a bunch of Budweiser and Bud Light through the line, but they also probably run natural light through there. If you go to the store, you see there's like cheaper beers, beers that you just drink, or that sinners just drink to get drunk off of, but aren't necessarily good beers. Whiskey is something that's considered one of the finer things in life. Like, it's not like some homeless guy's getting Skullbuster from the liquor store and getting drunk on whiskey. Like a finely aged Irish whiskey or something like that. Or Jack Daniels. And there's people have whiskeys and they think, oh, you know, this has an oaky taste because it was aged for 10 years in this barrel. Like, if you go to the bar and order a beer, a bottle of beer, like a long neck bottle, gotta have some cuts, let go of my hand. Oh, jukebox, don't start playing that song again. Well, there's a girl inside who loves me. Well, she won't understand. Long neck bottle, let go of my hand. So there's the cowboys out there in their Wrangler jeans from Sears drinking the long neck bottles, and they're $4. But if you go order whiskey from behind the bar, that might be $12, $13. So whiskey is a luxury item. And now let's move further into Corinthians, all right? If you move further into Corinthians, you get to thinking about the people who were eating and drinking. Some were even getting drunk at church, but they had, the wealthy among them had a lot of food at their first century potluck, and they weren't sharing with the poor people who didn't have a lot of food. So now you've got a guy who's got his theology discussion, but you have to be able to afford whiskey and cigars to be able to go. So not only are whiskey and cigars going to turn some people off because those things are vices, it's going to turn some people off because they just don't have that kind of money. So if somebody invited me to a whiskey and cigar tasting club, like, we're going to sit around my basement, we're going to play snooker or pool and drink whiskey and smoke cigars. We got a new whiskey this month that we're going to talk about, and we got a new cigar this month that we're going to talk about, kind of like their book club. I wouldn't be interested in going. And if there's people who like to do that, that's their thing. It's not mine. But somebody got in his mind, like, this is masculine, and me and these dudes are going to hang out and be men and smoke cigars and drink whiskey because this is what men like to do, and we're going to talk about theology. Notice it's not a Bible study. It's a discussion of theology. So these are a bunch of people who think they have something to contribute and they have something to know. If somebody invited me to a theology discussion and it's a bunch of laymen, I was like, no, I'm not going to a theology discussion with a bunch of laymen. Like, you guys need to be sitting under a teacher who's gone and studied systematic theology in seminary and let him tell you what it means. Or ask your pastor. Guys, we are 2,000 years removed from the last book of the Bible being written. The church has pretty much figured out the theology by now. If you go buy a systematic theology textbook, that's it. That's the theology. And the couple of things the people disagree about, that's in there. And it's stuff like sublapsarianism and supersublapsarianism. Or pre-mill, amill, post-mill. There's not a lot to discuss because it is what it is. We don't need novel ideas about theology from, forgive me, dilettantes smoking cigars and drinking whiskey in somebody's basement. So remember the guy's reasoning. He wants to make theology more approachable. So I think the idea is he's trying to attract newer non-Christians with this to talk about theology. Because these new Christians, or some of the new Christians wouldn't be comfortable, but maybe these non-Christians or these unchurched people, they're attracted by whiskey and cigars because those are worldly things. Do you see the problem that we're getting? It's not a Romans 14 thing. I'm not saying you're in sin. I'm saying you're stupid and immature and silly. Because you're trying to use something worldly to attract people. Worldly things attract worldly people. Worldly people don't need a theology discussion. Worldly people need to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, get saved, get baptized, get in the local church under the sermons, get in the Sunday school class, and be taught theology by a Christian discipling them. And then, after they've learned it, then they can discuss the finer points. Little kids drive go-karts, not race cars. Work up to it. So here you have a guy who has a vice, which could be off-putting to people, a luxury item, and he's... Could you imagine? We're tying a luxury leisure activity to our Christian community. That just seems so backwards and so wrong. It's exclusionary. And you don't want to be exclusionary to anybody but unholy sinners. Because they don't know Jesus yet. What this seems to me is it's like this guy who has his own individual interest in cigars and whiskey, and he wants to relate his Christian fellowship around his own personal interest. Now, do people have the Christian liberty to go do that? Absolutely they do. So, I mean, I wouldn't disfellowship this guy. I wouldn't say he's in sin, but there's probably a reason it's not a church-sponsored activity, because it's immature, stupid, and exclusionary. And silly. I mean, that's just so unbelievably silly. And by the way, that's why I cannot stand the Reform pub crowd with their whiskey and their cigar. We're so refined. All right, get you a $50 bottle of Jameson. Go down to the Dapper Gentleman in Ringgold and buy you a $20 cigar and sit with $70 worth of stuff on Friday, imbibing and smoking, and talk about theology. Which, by the way, is another thing that people with more money and sense will often do. How many people in Bible times had... You think Abraham was sitting around talking about theology? No, it's happening to him. Okay? We talk about theology as an abstraction because we have so much money, free time, and leisure in America, and religious freedom. So we're going to sit around and drink luxury drinks, smoke luxury cigars, and talk about abstract things. And it's important to be a good theologian. All Christians are theologians, essentially. Because you're all doing theology when you think about the Bible, okay? Every woman in your Sunday school class who makes a dumb comment when the Sunday school teacher says, anybody got any comments? And some, well, I think this. It's, let me tell you something. I'm 41 years old. 90% of Sunday school comments are dumb. Some people have really good things to say, men and women, but I've heard a lot of women in my time say a lot of dumb things in Sunday school. And maybe if you have a club full of cigars and whiskey, you don't have to listen to women saying dumb things about theology. See, there's arguably it's sexist what they're doing. Arguably. Because what woman wants to go to that? (sighs) And here's the thing. These guys are doing... It's not, like, church-sponsored. And it's okay to have a Bible study that's not church-sponsored. But remember, it's not a Bible study. It's a theology discussion. These guys want to sit around and talk about, I guarantee you, post-millennialism and Christian nationalism and Calvinism. And you got to understand, like, when you know about theology, you can kind of sneer down your nose at the people who don't. It's a good way to get full of yourself. And I'm not going to make it to today's show topic. So I think I will make this the show topic for today. You got me going, Lauren. I guess I'll do, you know what? Producer, director, actor. I guess I'll get to that Tuesday. When you have a lot of knowledge, knowledge can puff you up. And I would ask, Lauren, when you look at this group of guys and you look at their life, generally, are they evangelistic? Are they giving a lot of money to the church or proportional amount of money to the church? Are they helping the poor? Are they there on church cleanup day? Like, what do they do at church in terms of service and in the community as terms of service to others? Or is their Christian fellowship restricted to drinking expensive whiskey and smoking expensive cigars? Because let me tell you, I know there's cheap whiskey and cheap cigars, but nobody has a club around it. Okay? Nobody has a book club to read Pulp Fiction. So it seems to me, like I said, this guy is like, I want to talk about theology, and I want other people, we're going to sit around and talk about theology. Well, did you do the work of discipleship and learning the Bible that you need to do to get there where you can talk about it? Because listen, theology is something that you need to talk about intelligently. It is not your opinion on whether Jeff Bodine should have beaten Jeff Gordon in the NASCAR race. Okay? And by the way, you can tell I can't talk intelligently about NASCAR because I don't think either of those guys have raced for 20 years. So it seems to me, Lauren, that this guy wants to attract worldly people who don't know much about theology and then talk to them about theology, a thing which they shouldn't really be talking about because they're not ready. I would be embarrassed if I was a woman to be that guy's wife or that guy's mother. Frankly, I'd be embarrassed to be that guy's pastor. I'd be embarrassed if somebody who was a member of my church had a theology discussion group centered around whiskey and cigars. Really centered around anything. If it was centered around something I like to do, like playing laser tag. Like, we're going to play laser tag and then take this. This is our laser tag group. Or this is our Pokemon cards group. Some people like to sit around and talk about Pokemon cards. Or we're going to do fantasy football and then talk about theology. Stop centering your Christian fellowship around something worldly. Just enjoy your worldly thing. And don't try to like, all right, because we're going to exclude. Listen, church is diverse. This is the wokest I've ever sounded on the Christian community. I assure you I'm not woke. Church is diverse in that people have different convictions and interests. And if you want to do something churchy, like discuss theology, maybe you shouldn't do it to the exclusion of others. And that's just a part of discipleship. So if that guy invited me, I'd be like, I don't want to go to a theology group with you because you're in desperate need of Christian maturity. And I don't want to talk theology with an immature person like you. I'm not going to go argue post-millennialism and predestination with you, whatever pet thing that you think you know. You've read books on it, and now you're in the know. Remember we talked yesterday about the smart marks? I tell you, it's the smart marks who know theology. They've studied it. And they have a club in their basement Ain't no pastors there. Ain't no overseers there. But they've studied it. They've read the books. And everybody who doesn't fill in with them, they just don't get it. Sad. So try not to be so exclusionary in your church activities. Don't use vices. Don't use worldly things. It just looks bad. Think about this. What if your pastor showed up to preach the sermon and he was wearing a Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon t-shirt? You know, the black t-shirt with the prism where the light shines through and the rainbow comes out the other side, or the refracted light comes out the other side. We're just saying the Bible, you can't do that. It doesn't say that anywhere. It's just stupid. Don't do it. Remember when the outro was Learning to Fly by Pink Floyd? That's a long time ago. Not anymore. All right, Lauren, thank you. That got us all the way home. I got a little riled up. I can't stand it when people do stupid things. Because the minute you go to tell that guy he's doing something stupid, he's going to say, Romans 14! If I was more enterprising and I was a millionaire and I didn't have a conscience, I would make Romans 14 brand whiskey and cigars. The bottle of whiskey would have a little cartoon guy with a beard and a cigar with sunglasses on. It would be Romans 14 brand. Don't judge me, whiskey. $50 a bottle. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again Tuesday. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.